You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
It was a holiday special on Monday night in Brooklyn, as the brother duo of Aaron and Justin Holiday combined for 44 points, 15 assists, and 10 rebounds to lead the Pacers past the Brooklyn Nets, 115-86. After an abysmal first quarter, where neither team shot above 30% and both teams were tied at 18, the Pacers took off in the second quarter, outscoring the Nets 41-17. Indiana was led in part by G League-turned backup point guard Naz Mitri-Long, thanks to all the injuries, who scored 7 of his 12 points in that second quarter. The Nets, led by 28 points from Spencer Dinwiddie, made a slight comeback in the third quarter to cut it to 15, but a 16-point, 18-rebound night from Domantas Sabonis and 19.6 rebounds from TJ Warren were all too much for the superstarless Nets. Welcome in the Locked On Pacers podcast. My name is Adam Friedman. As always, I'm the host of this wonderful podcast. On today's episode, I bring you a breakdown of the Pacers' win over the Brooklyn Nets. As always, I bring you the good, the bad, and the ugly. A lot of good tonight, not a lot of bad, and only a little bit of ugly from the Pacers' win over the Nets. So let's just hop right into it. The shining star of the night, I think, is clearly Aaron Holiday. I may have spent a good 15 minutes complaining, bitching about him taking too many shots, him not knowing his role with this team, but they certainly needed him tonight in their win. He had 24 points and 13 assists, 10 of 19 from the field and 4 of 7 from 3. By far, is I think both career highs in points and assists. Like, his career is like 7, so just almost doubling that. Borderline triple-double, played 31 minutes, like was everything you wanted when you drafted him 2 years ago, so... Yeah, I mean, I can eat my words right now. Now you could talk about level of opponent and who they were starting a point guard. I guess they started Dinwiddie, but considering who the backup point guard was and whatever, you could make a case that Aaron Holiday certainly should have succeeded here and did. But, I mean, you got to give the young player credit, you know. Even if it is a Brooklyn Nets team down a lot of good players, you still have to play. You still have to put up 24 points. It's not easy. You know, the Pacers really dominated kind of the guard spots tonight, if you look at it. So Justin Holiday played sort of the shooting guard because of, again, the 15 injuries, give or take. Had 20 points and 4 rebounds on 6 of 11, shooting him 4 of 6 from 3. He was also another really good. And then, I mean, you can't forget Naz Mitri-Long, who was in the G League, like, what, 5 days ago, made the trip down from the main Red Claws to get to, I believe, Houston. It was either Houston or it was Milwaukee, or come home from Milwaukee, whatever it was. He had to do that, and he comes in tonight, goes 5 of 10 for 12 points, 3 assists, and was the second highest plus-minus player on the court, with a plus 21. The Pacers bench is my next kind of good. To win this game, the Pacers bench had to dominate. Now, granted, there were starters like of the five that played with the bench unit at times, but looking at the three core bench guys who played significant minutes is in McDermott, Beatizde, and, Goga. Goga, mess up his name. Goga were plus 35, Goga's plus 22, and Long was plus 21. So they certainly whooped Brooklyn's ass when they were on the court, for sure. Go to a bad, I guess. Miles Turner didn't have the greatest night. Not terrible, but just not a great night. 9.7 rebounds, 4-11 from the field and 1 for 4 from 3. He had 3 blocks, so certainly that's probably on the good side. Just not this offensive explosion. You saw Sabonis was a lot... just more dumb on the offensive end, but they were also running things more for Sabonis, so that is to expect. Sabonis' rebounding continues to pretty much dominate DeAndre Jordan, who, I guess only played 18 minutes, but the rebounding battle, the Pacers just thoroughly smoked the Nets by up 23. The Pacers had 63 rebounds, including 15 offensive. The Nets had 40 rebounds in the game. You look at just like the box score, I mean, the Pacers beat him. He took 17 more shots. They made more threes. They did less free throws, the only thing. But, you know, they had more rebounds, more assists, more turnovers, or more steals, more blocks. Same amount of total turnovers, more points off turnovers. I mean, all the box score stuff that clearly shows when a team wins by 29 points that should be there. You know, the Turner was a bad, switching back to kind of another good, I guess. I think you have to give some credit and some, shouts out to TJ Warren, who continues, I know he didn't have the best of nights, but he continues just to be a reliable player playing 38 minutes for this team. Whether he's shooting above 50% or not is important, but him just being a threat out there opens up the game for everybody else. He got to the line seven free throws, so probably 3 or 4 times. He just continues to be kind of the most consistent starter on this team. Only starter not to miss any games so far. Rice, so Sabonis has missed a couple games. Turner missed about 7. Brogdon's now missed two games. I guess you don't count the Houston one. He's the lone Mr. Consistency on this team. So there's a lot of good things to say about that. But yeah, he continues to be an awesome player for me in fantasy. I know everybody's sick of hearing that, me talking about my fantasy basketball team, but continues to be a really just decent fantasy basketball player who can rely on night in and night out. Moving on a little bit, I had one ugly from this game, and it had nothing to do with the Pacers. It is this Brooklyn Nets team is not very good now. They're down Kyrie. They're down Kevin Durant, obviously. They're down somebody else. I mean, they're not very deep. They don't have a lot of good, they don't have a lot of good talents at the top two. You know, I think there was a thought that when Kyrie and Kevin Durant came to the Nets, it was like, well, they now, they're just, the culture in Brooklyn is so great. And there's so much talent there, but really that just wasn't true. This team is borderline playoffs. Even with Kyrie, they're borderline playoffs. And without Kyrie, they're certainly not a playoff team. So they set at 5-8, the Nets do. And they would just, I don't know if it's just they threw this game away or not, but at times there was Shumpert was guarding Miles Turner. DeAndre Jordan, you just can't play him at times. Tony once, I think he said yesterday, DeAndre Jordan will try as hard as possible not to leave his feet and not to leave inside the 5 feet. It's just, I feel bad for Kenny Atkinson, who I think is a solid coach. Looked pretty good last year. There's just this, when you have so much money tied in Kyrie and Kevin Durant, and obviously both aren't playing right now, one for sure is going to play the whole year, it really severely handicaps this team ability. Now, I think once those two guys come back, this team is probably the best team in the East. Assuming you get Kevin Durant from 2 years ago, which the big after the Achilles, but they have two of the 10 best players in the East or whatever, 15 best players in the East, or 15 best players in the league, probably two of the best 7 in the East, give or take. But it this Nets team, it just feels off. I don't know if it's going to be a bad year for them because of the injuries and whatnot, but it was a throwaway year. Maybe they're going to try to get a good draft pick or whatnot. But yeah, this is not a good performance from a Nets team at home, especially blown up by 29 points when you're not like, the Nets aren't considered, the Atlanta Hawks of last year. Or I guess this year, who is the worst team in the league this year right now? It might be, let's pull it up real fast. I had this thing for a second. It's the worst team this year. They're not the Washington Wizards or the Knicks or the Bulls. They're just not. They're supposed to be a decent team. I get they've not been good so far. They're a -4 in net rating, which is just not, or -4 in points per game versus like allowing, and that's just not very good. But I don't know. This Pacers team continue to beat the bad team, which is a good sign. It just means that they're a well-coached team. You can see it tonight. The Pacers played some of the most jumbled lineups I've seen all year. And this is kind of back to the good. But they played some of the most jumbled lineups this year, and they just were fine. The Pacers are well-coached. They execute well, whatever, either game plan-wise or whatever it is. Or just because McMillan is one of the coaches that says, if you have an open shot, take it. And sometimes that's the best thing to do when you have so many guys who don't play together. It's like, just get an open shot, take the shot, 15-foot or whatever it is. Maybe that's what works for this team or whatnot. Certainly having both Holiday brothers was really, really helpful tonight. But the Pacers just feel like a team that no matter who's playing, they're going to figure out how to beat bad teams. They might not beat any of the good teams, which is fine, but they will figure out how to beat, these middling to bad teams in the league. And that's good enough until Vic returns or until, they get, Lamb and Brogdon back at least. Who knows all those? I'm going to take you through a quick injury update, but there isn't really a ton of news on that front. The Pacers, a lot of it is kind of mum right now because you just don't know. Obviously they practiced today, so there was some talk about who would play and who wouldn't play and whatnot. I'm trying to pull up the injury stuff real quick. So McConnell had a groin injury. He talked about how he kind of got it on the plane coming back from from Houston, I believe, is where he kind of felt that groin injury. That feels like it's something that's maybe not going to be like super serious, but it's not going to happen in this week. I don't know. It's not, you know, those kind of muscle injuries are tricky, just because you don't want to play risking reaggravation, because then it becomes a problem all year. And I don't know how severe it is, but it sounds like it's kind of a pain, and it's just a lot of like stretching, and it depends on how fast people heal, because they're just kind of weird. Lamb continues to be day to day. There isn't a ton of updates on what's going on with him, but his ankle injury continues to be day to day. I don't know if he's going to miss more time. He's now going on almost, I think, 10 days of injuries, give or take. Let's see. He last reported on 11-6, so now we're going on 12 days of day to day. Brogdon's back, still not a ton. I know it's spasms and whatnot, so that's always concerning. But those are the three guys who should be back sometime soon. I mean, everybody else, we're talking, you know, there's no injury news on Sumner or Vic, so just kind of ignore that. One more good before we hit a quick break, and that is the Doug McDermott show. So I know he went 2-for-7 from the field, but 2-for-4 from three. He continues to shoot just a ridiculous three-point rate on like 4 attempts per game or something crazy like that. You know, he's putting up a crazy amount of shots per minute. So I'm going to pull up his per 36 real fast, because that's kind of the best way to kind of grasp what he's doing. So if you pull McDermott's, you know, per 36, right now you're looking at a guy who would be taking 7 threes a game and shooting 42% on them with 15 points per game. You know, that's pretty insane. And just for a guy especially who is kind of I guess he's got more than one trick pony, but kind of maybe a three-trick pony. Just in terms of, he can basically shoot a three. You can get him cutting sometimes, and you get him for a long, you know, quick shoot 15-footer. But he continues just to be like, I mean, if that three-point percentage stays at the 43% 4 per game pretty much, he is going to become just more and more valuable at spacing, just because he's going to have to respect him so much, because he's just, you can't, you know, basically to equal that in, so for every three he makes, a team would have to shoot roughly 90% on his two-point shot, give or take. Sorry, for every, so he makes 1.8 threes per game, right? So that equals like 5.4 points. So you'd have to shoot, you have to make basically three shots. So most players shoot around 45. So for every 4 shots he takes, it equals 7 two-point shots, give or take. I know that math makes no sense. I don't know why I'm trying to explain it. But basically what it's saying is that you have to respect your three-point shot so much, because he's taking 4 a game and making like 1.8 of them per game. And it's just, it will continue to become super valuable. And if that continuously holds in big game situations, then it will become, you know, he will start pushing to playing kind of big fourth quarter minutes and moments where you need big offensive moments from players. So I think he continues to just turned the notch a little bit. Just, he's up a little bit more of a level than I thought he would be. Last year I wasn't as impressed. This year I'm like, he definitely is like a valuable plus player right now. Not defensively, he's still kind of a dud, but just because his offense is so good, he feels like he's just more valuable than last year. Let's take a quick break. On the other side, I'm going to do a kind of general topic. So the Pacers continue to be a two-point shooting machine. In tonight's game, they took 101 total shots, and they took 34 from three, which is pretty high. But they took a grand total, so I did the math real fast in my head. They took 68 two-point shots. They're averaging 65.5 two-point shots per game. So they are above that average. I think they've sort of found an inefficiency, at least with bad teams. So the league has shifted completely. I mean, this is an obvious shift. I'm not saying anything that's not new. But in a matter of from 2015 to 2016, the league shifted because the Warriors had two of the greatest shooters of all time. And all of a sudden, everybody tried to copy them and say, "What's your ton of threes?" The math works, right? So then you get the Rockets and you get the Bucks, who are just teams out shooting like a ridiculous amount of threes and basically building rosters around driving kick players, as in Giannis and Harden. And shocker, both guys are probably going to be the top two MVP candidates again this year, because they surround those players. First of all, are so talented that they, whatever system they're in, they would succeed, and they surround them with a lot of talented players that fit their skill sets. So it leads to these like exaggerated stats. It will lead them to probably both teams winning 50 plus games. Maybe the Bucks win 60 games they did last year. But for the rest of the league, it doesn't make a ton of sense. So what I mean here are the teams that are like bad. We're not talking like I said, like the Rockets or the Bucks, but the bottom 10 teams in the league, for example, the teams that if you can beat them, every time you play them, you can become a playoff team, right? So we're talking, for example, Wizards, Knicks, Bulls, Cavs, Hawks for now. I mean, who knows what happens with them? That's five in the East. Warriors, Pelicans, Grizzlies, Kings, Thunder. 10 teams are just bad, you know? And so the keys with them when the Pacers play them is getting more shots off than them per game. So, like, for example, in field attempted per game, the Pacers rank 7th. In two-point field goals per game, they rank 1st pretty much by a wide margin over every team but the Nuggets. And that's because their thought is because they'll take the open shot, because they'll take the quicker shot, they will be able to get more shots because they won't turn over the ball as much, because they won't waste possessions, right? So if you're constantly hunting the perfect shot, you're more likely to make a bad pass, turn over the ball, whatever it is. Now, there is something to say if you shoot a 3, offensive rebounding is better and whatnot, but they basically are betting they can get more 2s than you in a game, so that even if they don't shoot the perfect rate compared to your 3-point rate, they get so many more shots than you, they can make it up by shooting. They're shooting 50.7 from 2, which is like middle of the pack to bottom of the pack in the NBA, honestly. And then on the other end, they bet their defense can hold you to a 3-point number that's reasonable to beat you. And usually with these middling level teams, if you just play, you know, a little bit of, you know, in pressure D on the outside, you can beat them. Now, this doesn't work for the good teams, and to beat the good teams, the Pacers really have to play awesome defense and have a statistically anomaly in terms of their shooting during a game, whether it's because they take more threes, they normally take, you know, take 43s and make 12 or 13, or they get some after the rebounds or whatever. But basically, that's how the Pacers are playing, and I think for a three-year sample size, it's proving that to work. Spurs, very similar model. Now, the question is, that probably can't win a championship unless you go on a hot streak of just utter amazement and unbelievable proportions, but, you know, if you limit your turnovers, you jack up enough shots and just don't turn the ball a lot, you can get more shots than everybody else, and then you just make it up with solid D, that's a recipe to be okay in this league, and brilliant recipe for any team, which is kind of where I'm going with it. The Pacers have established a model for pretty much every team in the league to fall if they want to be average. Now, you could say, well, what's the fun of being average? You either want to be great or bad, and the mediocrity is kind of sucks. But, I mean, I can name a lot of franchises who would rather just be okay, a playoff team every year. I mean, we're talking teams like, so the Kings have made the playoffs in God knows how many years. Wolves made it once in the past 15 years. Grizzlies would love to be relevant again. Those are probably the three. Pelicans will be relevant again. I mean, those are teams. I mean, once you're relevant enough years, then it's like, this is kind of sucks. But, like, you know, Magic would love to be in the playoffs 4 or 5 years in a row. Hornets, same way. Probably the Bulls, same way. Wizards, the same way. Like, these are teams that just, like, Cavs probably want to win a championship because Hawks. But, like, the Pacers, while we can sit here and say, well, they can never kind of exceed this circle of mediocrity, to be relevant, to be a playoff team, to be competing every night for the better part of now 2 decades, I mean, that is something to be accomplished. Now, there's no trophies for it, nothing like that. But the Pacers have basically established a recipe. If you play this way, you can probably easily win 42 games a year. I mean, they're going to do it this year with a bunch of average players who were barely play together and are constantly being subbed in and out because of injuries and whatnot. They're basically going to be able to put up probably 42 wins that way, and then they might be able to exceed that with some exceptional play by Brogdon when he returns to Oladipo and whatnot. So the thing I don't understand this league is, I mean, I understand it why I kind of answer the question, but it really makes no sense why other teams have copied their model, right? No, the Nets, for example, who they just played today, were on that path, and then they obviously got off and take the Durant Kyrie path, which any team would do, don't get me wrong. But it's interesting that a lot of these small market teams, you know, they, like the Magic and Pistons, for example, they had an okay season, and then they doubled down on a probably unsustainable model, right? I mean, like the Magic right now, let me just pull up. I mean, they're the worst offensive team in the league, so I'm sure they have the worst effective field goal percentage in the league. Usually that's how that kind of turns out. They do, 48%, right? So if you pull up the Magic, who are the worst team in the league, and the Pacers line, just kind of to compare, for example. So, about 65% of every Magic shot is a 2, and 35% is a 3, obviously, right? So the Pacers on the other end are, it's about 71% to 28%. So the Magic are trying to kind of play the best of both worlds, right? They're trying to take as many threes, you know, middle of the pack probably frequency, you know, 35 is not super high, but it's also not, it probably falls 15, 16, maybe even sort of more like 18. But they don't have the players to do it. Now, they do have the players to take a lot of twos, but they are also middle of the pack in two-point frequency, right? So they rank, I believe, 12th in three-point, in two-point frequency, right? So for some reason, the Magic have decided, instead of copying the path of what's called to be mediocre and make the playoffs every year, they've taken this weird hybrid model, and that's just doesn't work. And that's what I'm trying to get at, is that, you know, we can complain about the Pacers' whole taking too much two-point shots and whatever it is, but for the Pacers to do what they're doing, for it to work, you have to fully commit to it. You can't half commit to it, right? Now, the Pacers had a ton of all three-point shooters, it'd be different, but in a league where it's hard to get those kind of players because they're overpaid at times. I mean, Eric Gordon, I think, is a guy who is certainly probably worth his value, but he got way overpaid his last contract because he's a great three-point shooter. It's easier to find a bunch of the really good two-point shooting guys. That's kind of the inefficiency in the market. And as long as you commit to saying, well, just take a lot of twos, trust your shots, take your 15-footers because you can make them at a high enough rate, you're going to be good. And so the Pacers and the Spurs, the same way, have kind of found this inefficiency in the market, which isn't enough to be great because you still need superstars to win the league, but enough to be the 4-5 average team. And maybe it's a bad thing, but I like to see it as a good thing because truly I think that makes the Pacers more fun, because I think if you're relevant for enough years, what you're doing is you're just buying lottery tickets each year and hoping eventually 1 year breaks your way. Now, it hasn't broken their way yet, right? So it could have broken their way in 98, in 2000, 2004, 2013, are all years where the Pacers were pretty close to winning a championship, more than you would think, right? 98, they could have beat Jordan in that seven-game series that he won. Jordan's amazing, and they break their way. 2000, they made the NBA Finals. Maybe could have broken their way, but instead, Kobe didn't turn things too bad. They won and lost six games. 04, they lost to the Pistons, could have broken their way that year. 05, again, really stupid brawl. I mean, they've been unlucky, don't get me wrong. LeBron, 2013, the same thing, because they've run into generationally talented teams, and then they've had kind of, you know, between the Lakers, the Bulls, and the Cavs, they've run into three of the greatest teams of all time. But eventually, if they keep playing the same lottery over and over again, they'll win, hopefully. Maybe it's not optimistic enough for you guys, but that's how I want to end this podcast. I think, you know, I would just have faith in the way it's playing right now and just hope that at some point the Pacers keep kind of playing the same lottery game where they're just trying to be in it. They will eventually hit the jackpot and get very close to winning a championship. That's all I got for this Locked On Pacers podcast. As always, you can tweet me at FreedomAdam5. You can tweet our podcast at Locked On Pacers. Follow my co-host Tony East at TEastNBA. We'll bring you this podcast 5 days a week. I believe tomorrow we're going to do a mailbag podcast, so look for that tweet from our Twitter account on to send your questions in. That's all for this Locked On Pacers podcast, and we'll see you guys again.